Good morning, and very happy that there's so much interest in this topic, getting to the heart of business. When Llewellyn first asked me to do this topic, do something on business, I said, what are these people coming to a spiritual conference going to care about business or work? And what I found out yesterday is there was a great deal of energy and magnetism around this. There's a real yearning to make our spirituality an everyday practice and to bring the things that we do when we're in meditation and when we come to these wonderful conferences alive in our everyday work. And what I'm going to talk about applies not just to business. I know there's people in the room that work in not-for-profit organizations and healthcare, and as artists, entrepreneurs, massage therapists, there's a variety of people represented in this room. And what I'm talking about really relates to all of those things. It's more about how to work it with heart, how to work in your heart place, how to put what you know from your spiritual practice into your work. Bringing heart into work. Where I'd like to start is just a short story about my life, sort of how I got here as a Sufi teacher working as a management consultant, primarily with big corporations, some with smaller corporations and government groups and not-for-profits, but how did I get here? And was not something that I would have guessed 25 years ago. When I got out of college, I went to work for a large corporation to pay off my student loans. I went to Boston. I wanted to live in Boston. It was kind of a fun place to live. That was my criteria. It was also close to my boyfriend who was at Dartmouth. So, the decisions at age 21, your criteria for your work, where you're going to live, are entirely different than at later stages of life. And so I went to Boston and got a job, which happened to be in New England Bell Telephone in the computer division. That was kind of what we look at now. They're kind of dinosaurs of computers, but that was sort of the cutting edge of the computer world in those days. And I was the second woman hired there. Remember, that was a time when women were really just starting to come into managerial positions in the workplace. There was a lot of discrimination for, whatever group you were part of. Certainly, there was stuff going on with women. There were, other things, ethnic and race things. It was tough. I felt that people were not treated very kindly. People were treated kind of that Newtonian view of people, like people as machines, kind of things, cause and effect reality. And I was very disheartened. I really found more wrong than right in my eyes in those days. And I stayed there for a few years and then paid off my loans and then decided there were some other things I wanted to do in my life which needed some money to fund them. So I took another job at another small company, a smaller company, moved from a large one to small. Worked there for a few years and then with my pocket full of money, bought a van and headed for California. And, those were the days, sort of towards the end of the 60s. Went out to California and ended up going to massage school and also worked with a psychic, working on my intuitive skills and ended up going up into the mountains of California and living in a little cabin at a gold mine. Mm-hmm. And had quite a nice, relaxed life, lots of friends, and it was very fun. And the pull was to come back to New England, so I came back to New Hampshire and bought 15 acres and built a little cabin in the woods, and then Well, actually, there's a quick story in that. There's a Zen story that I heard when I was doing the cabin, which is that there was a guy that was going along the path. He came along to where there was a potter making pots. And he was admiring the pots and watching the potter and his process of making pots. And he said, started saying how beautiful they were, admiring them. And the potter said, they're good vessels. You know, they'll hold water, be good for people to eat on. He says, yeah, they're good, good form. He said, but what I'm really working on is what's going to remain when the pots are broken. And I read that story right when I started building this cabin. So I really did that as my practice, you know, as I was building, you know, as hammering the nails, you know, I watched the mood I was in. And if it wasn't the mood that was the right energy I wanted to build that cabin, I did something else, you know. So that was how I moved along, ended up meeting my husband, buying a 200-acre farm at the end of a town maintained road, mellow life. I was teaching yoga, meditation. My daughter over here had a baby, small town librarian for a while, kind of very mellow life. And then working with midwives, doing home births. I was an assistant that sort of came from teaching prenatal yoga. I was leading Sufi dancing, Sufi meditations and such. You know, it was quite a nice life far from the corporate world. When the call came, when a guidance came to me that I was to take what I'd gotten from out on the edges and take it into mainstream. And I said, excuse me, I think you got the wrong person here. I don't think this message is for me. So I kind of ignored that for a little while. But, you know, as guidance comes in, you can't ignore it forever. And it kept pressing in down on me. So I said, well, all right. I did like groups of people. I'd worked in teaching a stress management class, and I really liked the group dynamic. So I went and got trained as a team facilitator and doing outdoor team programs. Well, I was working primarily with school groups, university groups. It wasn't very long before I started segueing over into corporate groups that were also coming to that facility. And I found I really liked it and was pretty decent at it. And, you know, things kind of took me along and landed in a couple years' time working with you know, Jack Welch of General Electric. Some of you may know that when he, it was, I don't know if it still is, but it was one of the biggest corporation in the world, General Electric. And there's a guy, Jack Welch, that took it over and reinvented GE. You know, he did some very visionary things. And he did these workouts, which at that time was a very new concept, which is to pull people from every level of the organization to brainstorm solutions to problems or to come up with new innovations. So you would have you know, a director level person with an administrative secretary, and you'd have a customer and a vendor and a bunch of mid-level managers from different departments, from manufacturing and from, you know, the financial side, all on the same team solving these problems. So it's really dynamic, real exciting, and sort of that was what I cut my teeth on, you know, really moving into this work. And it's just kind of, I've followed guidance along over the last 15 years. I've been doing a lot of training, consulting, and I find that some of the things that I did get out there on the edge absolutely apply. A lot of the things from my spiritual practice apply. Things from the midwives. For example, you know, the way that midwives work during home births is they don't intervene aggressively. They pay attention to the process. They pay attention to, you know, the person that this is coming through, and also work with intuition and don't intervene unless they think that the intervention is going to put it in a direction that would be a good direction to go in. Well, that's how I do my work when I, you know, do coaching and training with executives. I don't say something that's going to send them on a new vector unless I have a pretty good hunch intuition and intellectual understanding that that's probably going to take them where it needs to go. Not always right, but I really try and think about it before I jump in and do that. So that's my story, and one of the things I'm going to talk about a little later on is kind of how I do bring the practice into my work. But what I'd like to do right now is turn it around to you. I'd like to show you kind of where we're going here is looking at this, we're going to be talking, that was my story, that's what I was just telling you, kind of where I come from. And I started there with my story because as Sufis, we're storytellers. And as storytellers, my story, you project meaning into my story. It's a symbolic story. It's just like the dream work that we do. You know, it's you project symbolic things onto that. So that's my story. We're eventually going to get down here to your story. We're going to start into it here with focusing intention, focusing your intention. That's when I've had cards and pencils around for each of you, and I'll tell you in a minute what we're going to do with that. Then I'm going to talk about what I see as this new energy that's coming in, and some of the stuff that Llewellyn von Lee keeps talking about. I also am seeing that and seeing its manifestation in business, in the corporate world, and I'm seeing a lot of conflicting things as structures are dissolving and newer things are emerging. I'm going to talk about some of that and some of the changing systems, some of the chaos I see going on, some of the resistance, and also kind of the new leadership that's emerging. And what I'm being asked now to teach in terms of leadership has changed. And it has to do with this. I'm going to talk about that. Then here, where we're going to get practical, in the heart of the workplace, how do you bring the practice? And I'll talk some about what I'm doing, and I'm sure there's people in the room who have some wisdom to bring to the table, too. And, you know, there probably are some questions about how to do that as well. So that's where we're going to work with that. And lastly, kind of bringing around full circle back to self, and applying it to yourself, given all that we're going to be doing in this session, how does that change your story as you go forward out of here? How does your story change as you recognize you being part of this? There's a story that's coming to me before we write on the cards, which is a story of the 100th monkey. It's a story about morphic resonance, if any of you know this principle in physics. It's a relatively new principle. Some of you may know the story, but see where it applies here differently than it may have applied to where you've looked at it before. There's a story of monkeys that lived on this island where there were no human beings living. And one of the things that they ate were these roots, that you know, these that were shallow roots. So they would dig these roots up and they would eat the roots. And one monkey one day went down to the water and washed the root and then ate it, you know, gave it to her baby. And her baby, you know, went and, you know, washed the roots like mom had showed her and ate the roots. And, you know, the next day they're down there at the water washing the roots and some other monkeys look over, see this, and they start washing the roots. You know, it gets the dirt off. You know, it's not so gritty to chew, right? So they start washing the roots. Sooner or later, all the monkeys on this island are washing the roots because it's a better way. And when it got to this critical mass of 100 monkeys doing this, washing the roots on this island, an island miles away that also was inhabited by these monkeys started washing the roots. Now, this was too far for the monkeys to swim. This was far, far away. There's something about the consciousness, you know, that you get to a certain quantum, you make a quantum leap, you know, you get to a certain place in the consciousness and something happens that everybody gets it. Now, why do you think I'm telling you this story in this context? There's also been some human studies on this principle. This is not just a nice story. There's this principle of morphic resonance has been studied. They actually noticed it first in England. They did study it in humans, but they noticed it first with, who's from England? There's some people from England in here. Isn't there someone from England? I guess Stella is, but she's not here. Yeah. But maybe you knew this story. The bird watchers noticed that there was this little bird called a blue tit. That this was back in the 40s. It started pulling the little milk cap off the milk and drinking the cream. And then, you know, the guy came to the bird club and he was telling the story about this little blue tit he'd been watching taking the cap off and drinking the cream. Well, the next month at bird club, guess what? Somebody else had seen these little birds doing this, you know, tearing the caps off, drinking the cream. And, you know, a few months later, there were birds, you know, there were more and more sightings around London of these little birds doing this. And then it was like, you know, happening outside of London as well. And then, someone's from Holland in this room. Isn't someone from Holland? Holland? No. Where was those yesterday? Okay. Suddenly, this showed up over in Holland across the channel, where these birds were pulling the little caps off the milk and drinking the cream. And they surmised, well, you know, they got on a boat and went across the channel and, you know, ended up over there. The Nazis came into Holland and occupied, how long was it? It was at least 7 years, it was many years that the Nazis occupied. And during that time, there were no milk deliveries in Holland. When the milk deliveries resumed many years later, all of this species of bird was doing this behavior. It was beyond the life cycle of memory. Okay? And the physicists think there may be something that gets in the DNA coding after a point in time. They, you know, they have some theories, but there's no evidence. They did some human studies with the Times crossword puzzle. They had four groups. Two groups agreed not to look at the crossword puzzle. And they gave one of those groups a crossword puzzle before that puzzle came out in the newspaper on Sunday. They gave it to another group, a puzzle, they gave them a puzzle like the one, but was not the one coming out on Sunday. On Monday, they had two other groups. They gave the puzzle that came out and the puzzle, just the fake puzzle that wasn't coming out, that looked like that puzzle, to this group. The group that did the puzzle after everybody in London had done their London Times puzzle on Sunday did it faster, quicker than the group that did the fake puzzle that somebody had done on, the group had done on Friday. So what's this telling us? What does this tell us about consciousness and presence? Anybody, what is it saying to us? Yeah. Yeah, we're connected. What else does it say to you when you hear this story? What meaning do you project into it? Yes, yes. Enough people, enough parts start to get it, it transmits to the whole. Which really is where I see you people in very key positions, even being in on this conversation. I see this as seeds being planted in each of you about how to take heart into business and how to be part of this transformation that's going on in a very real and practical way. So given that, I want you now to think on this card, There's two sides to the card. On one side, I'd like to have you write what you personally are wanting out of the session. And on the other side, side two, is what questions you're coming here with. This is about focusing your attention. I've written this down, what I just said I've written down. So on side one on the card, what do you want from being in the room, from being in on this dialogue? What do you want from this? On the other side, what questions do you have about getting to the heart of business or about applying this to work? So make sure you flip over. Does everybody have a paper? And on one side of the page, put your name. Put your name on it, in case this card gets put down. If it's not completely as clear as you want it to be, that's okay. We're going to do something with this. This is about focusing intention. It's also true that your answers are only as good as your questions. Okay? Questions catalyze thinking. They promote people to go deeper if they're good questions. So what we're going to do is we're going to get into a partnership. You're going to get with a partner. And I'm going to give you something called the Insight Dialogue, which there's a Buddhist guy who is using Insight Dialogue, not with business groups, but it's something that I'm interested in doing. I'm going to practice this with you. It's just a very simple way of listening in a deeper way to another person. There's three steps of this listening process. It's pause, which is where you breathe, center. Then relax, you know, relax in your body, in your heart, you know, allow your heart to be soft so it can listen, so the mirror of your heart can reflect back to this person. And then open, just open, whatever that means to you. So what I'm going to do is give you the opportunity to pair up with someone. I encourage you to get with somebody you don't know, because there's a real richness here in the cross-pollination and this exchange. So this may mean getting up and walking across the room. But what you're going to do, let me give you your instructions once you pair up, because as soon as you pair up, it's going to go to entropy. And I have a little thing to bring us back together. When you hear this sound, okay, that means we're reconvening back in the large circle, okay? So when you get in your partnership, you share what you have on your card with this person, and then use this person to get more clarity on the questions, or to discuss the questions. You have a real dialogue about what this is for you. Any questions about what you're going to do in this pairing? Yeah, let's deal with that before we move, because we may get off.
The question that I have is, if someone learns a type of behavior that is harmful or stupid, then can that be transmitted to the adult as well?
Okay, that's a good question. His question was, if someone learns a behavior that's harmful or stupid, can that be transmitted to everyone? I hadn't thought about that, actually. I think I don't look at that so much as morphic resonance. I look at that as we have certain themes that we go through, the certain things. We don't have stories I don't know about you Europeans, how you do on the oral traditions, but in the North American culture, we don't do so hot on storytelling. I mean, traditionally, if you look in native cultures, just cultures that have existed for long periods of time, they teach their wisdom about right and wrong, about how to be, how to avoid doing dumb things. And the teaching stories, and the stories that they tell, around the fire or to the children, those are, teaching stories. Our teaching stories have become television and movies and dramas that get played out, like the O.J. Simpson case or the Tanya Harding, the skater that broke their knees. If you're European, hopefully you didn't hear about that. Hopefully, I'm hoping you don't know what I'm talking about when I talk about Tanya Harding. But that's one of our stories. All of us who live in the U.S., we know that story, right? Too well. So we look for stories about right or wrong, and we get compelled by some of these things because there's a yearning for some meaning that way. Yes, it's entirely possible. Something as big as that, sort of like overriding ways of being, like in the Industrial Revolution, seeing. And what there is, though, I see is big paradigms, like Newtonian physics was really big, which is cause and effect. It saw people as machines. If you give people the best instructions, the right instructions, then you're going to get productive work out of them. Whereas now we're shifting into a time of quantum physics, which is relational. It's about relation. It's about interaction. It's a very different view. And this is coming into leadership. It's coming into businesses. It's coming into a lot of things. So I think things like that do get in the DNA. I'm hoping Jerry Springer doesn't get in the DNA. Okay, so let's go into our small groups. Okay, now you know what your job is. And I'm going to give you about 5 minutes for each. What? Don't understand the job. Okay. This is. Thank you. This is one of the things that happens when we hear stories. We go off in story. When we start thinking about story, we go off in another place. We forget, like what we were just holding in that linear part of our brain. Okay, back to the linear part of your brain. How this works is you're going to pair up with somebody you don't know. Bring your little card, right? And you're going to use this insight dialogue method of listening and dialoguing with the other person to get more clarity on your questions. Okay? So you're going to have a dialogue back and forth with each other. I'm going to give you, I said 5 minutes. I think that's too short. I'm going to give you 10 minutes with this person, so it's 5 each. Okay? So make sure you give each person's questions adequate time. Ralph.
Yeah, I was surprised by how much energy there really was and how much my partner instantly understood what I was talking about and gave me perspectives that got me excited.
Uh-huh. Neat. Neat.
There's just a lot of energy in that.
So the one thing that struck you is the energy. Okay. The energy is palpable in this room when that was going on. Did you notice that? Yeah. What else significant from the dialogue? Bring you back in the container. Laura.
I think having this, this is similar base to what we'd already established in the first bit of the gathering. It just immediately we kind of met at a level that was already, it wasn't, even though I've never spoken to before, we just
Yeah, so I'm hearing a few things. One is because of what we're doing here at the conference, perhaps, you know, we're starting at a deeper level of connection making. So the exchange, you know, I was noticing that I got to go around and eavesdrop on a few of these conversations, and they were conversations that were going below the surface immediately. And I think that's a yearning that I see with human beings. There's a yearning, and this yearning is in the workplace. You know, we spend more time in the workplace than we spend anywhere, most of us. And there's a deep yearning to, you know, kind of live out our destinies and to find meaning and to find depth of connection. Yeah. What about the questions? What are some questions that are bubbling up here from this dialogue? I'm curious, what are some significant questions that people have that you want answers to? So how to take the meditation practice, keep it alive in the workplace.
Because whatever, or any other practice, the connectedness that you feel with whatever the other is. Mm-hmm. So that you can be really bringing that higher part of yourself.
Mm-hmm. So do you want to talk about that? Yeah, sort of getting into that energetic, that emotion as an energetic. I recently had some guys cut down a dead tree in my yard, and there were four of them. I was up in my, I have an office in the wing of my house, and I was hearing laughter. I kept hearing laughter out there. The guys were laughing and joking and having a good time while they were working. And they were working hard. They were hauling, you know, these big stumps and things, you know, sometimes taking all four of them just to move these pieces of wood. And yet I was hearing laughter. And I went out afterwards when I paid him, I commented about that to them. And I said how wonderful it was to hear the laughter. And they said, well, we just decided in the morning that we're going to have a good time. You know, like this life is too short to not be enjoying what we do. And he said, it's really an attitude. It's really an attitude. You know, just, you know, the guy, there's the older one in the crowd just said, it's an attitude that I've chosen in life that I take every morning. I decide I'm going to enjoy my life. And it really came through. So let's stop and talk about this just a little bit. I'll say some of the things that I do, and then there may be other additions in here. When I first started working in the business world, I thought they were two separate things. But I also felt like it didn't make sense to have my spiritual life and my work life. You know, I have one life. There's one person, one being, one life. So I chose to really think about it, first of all, as one life. It is not my work life, it's my life. It's not my spiritual life, it's my life. And there's a constant practice of remembrance when I'm in the workplace. And how that remembrance works is I remember sometimes to breathe. You know, sometimes I find I'm going too fast, I'm doing, you know, too much, I'm not paying attention. And the tip-off sometimes is things go awry. Things go off. They spin a little out of control, or somebody is offended by what I've said, or, you know, there's some little crunchy thing that exchanges between us, then I'll go, ah, okay, bring me back here. I breathe and come back to a place of remembering. And I also sort of say, where am I? Am I up here in my head? Drop down to heart. You know, get heart and head involved in the process, not just be in my head. Usually when those things happen, I'm just up here racing around and I'm in my head. I'm not in my heart. Another thing that I do in my work is I love the people I work with. And that includes the people that are a pain in the neck. And I've taken a new view of people with the pain in the neck, that what I find is often, if somebody really bothers me, it's either reflecting something of my shadow, or they're very, very different than me. It's usually one of those two things. Actually, there's a third, is when they're in their pain. There's a third one, which isn't necessarily connected to my shadow. When they're in their pain, when they're in, you know, when something has triggered, you know, whacked on their pain picture, you know, on their patterns that bring up all sorts of weird behaviors or reactions, that too. So the first, you know, if it's about my shadow, then that, of course, is my work. That's about looking at what's brought up for me. And as David White, the poet, who has written a book called The Heart Aroused, says, if we don't live out our destiny in the workplace, we're in trouble. You know, when your shadow work comes up in the workplace, he says, what better place to work it out than right there in the workplace? Because, you know, you get it mirrored back at you all the time. So one is recognizing when things come up, maybe it's about your work. That then it becomes the spiritual practice. Then it becomes, you know, centering, looking, paying attention, committed to working with heart. The second one, when someone's really different than you are, I find that a lot of the conflicts that come up in the workplace are stylistic approaches, differences in approach. A lot of differences that way. For example, if you have a person who's just very direct, you know, you find these people a lot at high levels of the organization or in sales, marketing, very direct style. You put a person with a really direct style with a very people-focused person who's paying attention to feelings and how the team is getting along in the workplace. Well, the direct one goes, look, this change is happening. I want you guys to just get over it, all right? It's changing. Just get on board with this. Forget it, you know? It's happening. What happens to the people who are more people-focused, more process-focused? They're going to go, grumble, grumble. They don't care, you know, heartless. You know, right there you have a conflict or just, you know, bad feelings based on style. And what is that, you know, so one is your self-awareness. What is your style? And what is another person's style? So it's paying attention. It's just like we were doing that pause, relax, open, you know, really be open, pause. What is it? You know, what's going on? Why is this person bothering me? I sometimes ask myself, how is it that this person is so different than I am that they're bothering me this much? You know, if they're really bothering me, it's either my shadow or that they're really different or I can't deal with their pain. It's one of those three things. Yeah. Yeah.
And I generally find myself in the position where, you know, it's the second line guy who says that to me, and then I've got to get to the team and have them understand, well, you know, he said that, but you never really got to do it more gradually.
Mm-hmm.
That's satisfying.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess what I'm saying is, well, how do I balance between that energy and, you know, that the director is feeling like, you know, Ralph's a good guy, but, you know, he's still, so, you know, touchy-feely.
Right. I think that you have to run it through you energetically, and as it comes out, know who it is you're having to give the message to. And developing the, you know, the flexibility and sensitivity. You know, what are they? Are they all people-focused people? Or are they more information-focused people? Yeah. Or there might, you know, another you know, major way of approaching things is through information, not through people. You know, so giving them the information and the change. So it's having that kind of flexibility. So not, I think one of the biggest mistakes I see that people make in the workplace is they expect everybody else to act and be just like them. Mm-hmm. You know, there's one guy that has this thing he calls the platinum rule. It's do unto others as they would like to be done unto. Platinum rule, do unto others as they would like to be done unto. Okay.
Is that
it's a very much, bottom line, it's love. It's a love. I agree. The spaciousness that holds it is love. It is love. And I find when I have someone who really challenges me at work, the strategy I go to is loving that person. Now, how that manifests has to do with how I can't, they allow me to love them, and it's different for different people.
And whether you can shift into it, you can also
yeah.
shift.
Yeah. I require myself to try. I, you know, can I always shift into it? Not always, but I require myself to try.
Mm-hmm.
That's when you go to your most dysfunctional behaviors under severe time pressures. That's when I think. Yeah, one of the things that I use is a Sufi practice. It's, you know, it's breathing in one nose and out the other. It comes from Chagall, but it's sort of an abbreviated version of it, is breathing, you know, when I go from one meeting to another quickly, it's just breathing in-breath and out-breath through, you know, the right and left nostril to balance it and to clear what I just went from before I go to the next one. I find breath is extremely important in... When you're moving fast. And one of the things that when you get moving fast, you kind of like get ahead of yourself almost physically in the plane. You know, you're like, you're moving so fast, you're already there when you're right here walking to that meeting. Sometimes I find, you know, when I'm walking fast, there's a thing about rhythm. You know, the Sufis talk a lot about rhythm, particularly, you know, the Sufi order tradition teachings are about rhythm. And, you know, breath and rhythm are extremely important. And if you shift your rhythm of what's going on in your physical body, you shift your rhythm in your consciousness.
I haven't worked in a 15 years, so I remember that, but I worked on Wall Street for 25 years. And I often, you know, I would try and remember to do the zipper, and then usually when I walked out the elevator, it was gone, you know, and I was just on the other side of the table, or the next.
Yeah, I think that present, being present, there's several things that transpire there. One, of course, is the other person feels you really being present with them. There also, I think when you're truly present, there is presence. I think when you're truly present, you are bringing presence to the situation as well.
Hmm. In line with that, in a different way, I found a long time ago that people were coming to my office that I was supposed to be helping, and I could sense that they were hungry.
They were what? Angry?
Hungry.
Hungry. Oh, I thought we were hungry for spirituality. This was like literally, they needed their toast. Interesting. Yeah, and there's a whole energetic that goes with that giving of that, too. You know? And I think, you know, it's important to remember that we have the capacity to imbue things with energy, you know, because of our understanding. I mean, if you're going to, you know, just giving fruit to people, I mean, you can, you know, there's a blessing that can happen with that fruit. So when they eat it, you know, that something's conveyed with that. When you're going to hold a meeting or be a part of a meeting, you can do some prayer. I always work on a prayer level. I mean, I go into conference centers. I work in, you know, conference rooms in manufacturing plants where there are, you know, loud machines out there. And, you know, the energy in these places is pretty wild. I always do some prayer, sometimes before I even arrive at the place. You know, I work with beings to clear that space. I also work with prayer for the people that are coming to that. I work with prayers that I will be guided to give them what they are looking for if it's within the context of what I can do in that seminar or that meeting. So, you know, working with prayer is another way to work with this, you know, spirit in the workplace. I find that there's much you can do on the inner plane, and as far as talking about it, I mean, talking about spirit and spirituality and meditation, it's not really that appropriate in most workplaces, but there are things you can talk about. I mean, one is, you know, when you talk about building teams, when you talk about respect, when you start talking about values, I find when you shift the conversation to values, what we hold important, it takes people into a deeper place. I often in my seminars will bring up something on values, a dialogue on values, because then people talk about integrity. They talk about compassion. They talk about respect. They talk about honesty, truth. All these things come up that people really want to have present in the workplace. Most people want that. And I find, you know, integrity for me is integration. And I find what we're talking about here is about integration. It's like the whole person. It's bringing together things. Sure.
Mm-hmm.